There's just a whole lot of background noise going on. It's the news, according to me. Here we are. It is Monday morning, August 10th. We're a third of the way, basically, through August already. Pushing our way towards winter time. And it's cold and snowy. Nasty. Rainy. Cold. Just cold and snappy. Sorry, I'm off on a tangent. Hey, it's 2026, actually, still. At least we got that going for us. But we're over halfway through 2026. It's 9:16 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm in the home studio this morning. Tomorrow morning might be a possible, tomorrow or Wednesday. I'm not sure which it's going to be yet. Tomorrow, it's probably going to be, well, Wednesday looks like it's going to be more likely that I will be at the International Worldwide Headquarters. However, it's a little bit more difficult for me to do I have a different kind of computer system at the worldwide headquarters. I think I can still do the bot thing without any issues. However, there's a new feature today I'm trying out, and and we're going to do it at the end of the show. We're going to have everybody together. In fact, we're going to bring Skip on at the end and talk about his firing. We fired Skip on Friday last week. It was his last day, and he took it really well. I was kind of surprised. He actually was like, "Oh, that's the way it goes." That's it. Yeah. But we invited him back on a special farewell segment we're going to play today. And it's going to be a panel discussion. All of the bots will be in the room at the same time. They're going to be talking to each other. This is going to be very interesting, I think. It's part of a new feature that the studio is going to have. Or a plug-in that you can get on Pro or Starter, either one on the program. Now, by the way, this show is brought to you by podcastcaller.com, something I designed and built for the show. Basically, it's okay, so the show's brought to you by me. I just talk about the Podcast Caller occasionally, which there will soon be another podcast called the Podcast Caller Show. I'm kind of working on the finer points on that when we're refining the show, what the show is going to be about or how it's going to function. It's basically going to be a show about how the podcast caller works and kind of a combination advertisement plus how to operate the whole thing. And all the functions should be up and running pretty shortly. Actually, this week is everything's on track to get done. Have everything done. Anyway, in the meantime, in my cup, I have chai with Almond Joy creamer in it. Because sometimes you feel like a nut, and sometimes you don't. Right now, Almond Joy is when you feel like a nut. So I have, I don't even know, do they even sell just the regular Mounds? All I see anymore is Almond Joy. I don't even see Mounds anymore. Mounds is the one without the almonds in it. In my backup cup, I have a wonderfully cold cup of sweet peach tea that I personally made. Homemade sweet peach tea. It's nothing from a factory, nothing from a mix. It's fresh brewed. Well, fresh brewed. It was brewed a few days ago. Almost out of it, though. I'm going to have to make a new fresh batch before I leave for the weekend. I've got... It's Friday's show. We'll be coming to you from Norfolk, Virginia. I will be in Norfolk most of the day on Friday. Thursday morning show it'll be here from the home studio. It has to be from home. Definitely home studio. But the Friday show will be from Norfolk, Virginia. At least that's the plan. We'll see how that works out, and then. Of course, Monday's show will be back here in the studio. After Monday's show, after the weekend here, I'm not going to be working for about another month after that. So I've got almost 4 weeks off, and I think I'm going to be the only thing that's going to get in the way of the show at that point will be the traveling. I'm going to kind of on vacation, so I might be doing some traveling that might actually get in the way of some of that stuff. So we'll just have to see how that works out, but. Yeah. In the meantime, we're at it here. We're just having at it, And we're going to get into the show. Today's Mishmash Monday, one of my favorite days. Mondays and Wednesdays I kind of like because it's a throwback to the old show and we just used to talk about whatever. Way back in the day, we had a two-person podcast. We had me and Rabbi Rick, and we would talk about, even before that, it was just me again, but Rabbi Rick came on for a little while during the 2020 election fiasco and everything that happened after the 2020 election and everything. It was just, we talked about that a lot, which everybody was talking about. But it was an interesting time. It was fun times with Rabbi Rick there. It was kind of hard for him to get over here all the time, driving over to do the show, and kind of I think I had a couple of phone calls with him actually, with the show. Anyway, yeah, we have a few things going on. I've got some callers. We're going to get back right after this little. We're going to play a little ditty. Which we always do. We always play our little ditty. Ditty, ditty, do. This is going to be a short one today. It's going to be a little short one. And we're going to jump right into the show. So here goes. We're going to play this.
Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer, I'm definitely not your financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news according to me and me alone. Now let's get started. Welcome to the show.
Okay. All right. Then we got. Sorry, I was singing along there. It's a little bit of a problem. We have. Let's go. Okay, let's get right into it. I have no idea what you guys are going to say. By the way, sorry, I had a little cough there. We got a new. We got the person who took Skip's place. His name is Leonard. See how he does. I didn't change his personality, but I think that they have some. There's the voice itself has a few things built into it. So I think we'll see how this works out. I don't know if it was kind of built in the back end with this whole thing. I don't know his little. You know, he's got kind of like his own little personality. We'll see how it works out with this different voice. We have to go in and do some tweaking on his brain to make sure things work properly. And every employer needs to have that ability to go in and tweak their employees' brains. I think that's just part of the American way. We have, let's just start off here with Chloe, just to keep things light and see what Chloe has to say today. We have, she's right here. We're just going to start off with Chloe. Go ahead, Chloe.
Kevin, love mm-hmm. your takes. So, like,
of course you do.
Everyone's talking about that celebrity meltdown over the weekend at the award show.
Oh.
Totally went viral on X with the political rant. Do you think Hollywood even realizes how out of touch they look? Or are they just completely living in their own bubble at this point?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, they're living in their own bubble. There's no question about that. I think that's, you know, that's been going on for a long time. I think some of them realize it. There are some, I think, that have some down-to-earth, you know, down-to-earth personality, normal personalities. You have to understand, there's a whole mindset. In order to become successful as an actor or an actress, there's this whole thing of having to be able to role play and kind of get, you know, there are a lot of actors who've been doing it a long time who have come out and admitted that they're not sure who they are as a person because they're always playing a role. And it becomes difficult for them to really go through the whole thing of self-awareness and to know who they really are. unless they go through it prior to becoming an actor, especially if they make it big, that's a whole different thing. Because that, even just having notoriety and making, I recently heard Kevin Bacon. it was kind of interesting what he said. He was on this panel and he was answering some questions, and he said something about his ability, you know, his all the background music, all the background noise came on. It was turned off finally. We have, he said, you know, it's going out in public and being recognized. He said 99% of the time it's good. People are usually, you know, pleasant and kind and courteous and very positive about things. He wanted to know what it was like, what it'd be like to go out and just not be recognized. And so he went to this place. He had some studio folks. They fixed him all up in an outfit it's kind of did something with his hair and his makeup and stuff, and had him kind of made up so that nobody would recognize him. And he went out in this place, I guess some place called the Grove or something, whatever it is. And went walking around, which is a place where there's a lot of paparazzi, a lot of actors go out at this place, I guess. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a market or if it's a place where there's lots of bands or something. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a hangout, what it is. And he went to this place, and I guess he walked around for a while, and he said nobody recognized him. And he said it wasn't any fun at all. He said he actually missed their notoriety. He said, and he was just being totally honest with. I thought that was really, really interesting. Now, Kevin Bacon, he's one of those guys that are down to earth. Keanu Reeves is a very down to earth guy, in my opinion. I think he's, you know, they've at least tried to maintain some semblance of humility about themselves, and I think they've got an honest. They're older though now. See, this is when actors and actresses are younger. They think very highly of themselves. This is why they come out and start talking about politics. Because they think that in their little world, they're the most important person around them. You know, they have this entourage of people who fawn over them all the time. And they start thinking themselves to be so important that their opinions matter to other people around them, and they have so much influence. And this is why they many times will come out and endorse a candidate, or they'll speak out against a candidate. And it does nothing but polarize themselves against half of their constituency, half of the people who are there, maybe sometimes more than half of their fans. And then they start to get political in the movies that they make, and they start to put, you know, stick politics into things and political correctness and everything else that goes into everything. It becomes this whole culture that they think that they're having an impact on the on life in society, and they're not. It's all they do is destroy their own careers. And there are some people, I think, that older folks in who've been around a while, especially the ones who are lean a little bit more towards the conservative side of things in Hollywood, they realize if they come out and make, you know, statements about their conservativeness, that it will be the end of their career. That's called fascism. When you can't speak your mind, That's the mentality of these people is fascism. If you either, and sometimes they'll just, now they're seeking them out and asking them their opinions. And of course, then they put them on the spot. And then they end up having to say something or not say something, even not saying something. As long as, if you don't go along with the mantra. So there is a whole culture there. It's not just a bubble. It is a culture. I would call it more of a fortress than a bubble, but they live in this world where they, you know, they call us the flyover states and everything else. They, you know, we go between New York and LA and everything else is the flyover states, and we don't matter. We're just the cannon fodder. We're just the people who pay for their movies. And they just think that's all that matters. They don't think that anybody out here in the cornfield matters at all. Little do they know, we're the ones who do all the work in the country. We're the ones who feed them. The food doesn't just show up out there. We're the ones who grow the food, do all the stuff, make it all happen here so that our country is the powerhouse that it is. New York doesn't produce anything. LA doesn't produce anything. The country produces things. You don't know of it. What's the major industry in New York City? There isn't one. other than entertainment. You know, there's the industry that makes the country work. It's not based on that. We got Wall Street and everything else there. You got all the trading that goes on, but all that happens because of what happens in the breadbasket of the country. And so that's where they lose themselves. Yeah, they are living in a bubble. They are living in this fantasy land. But it's a thing that the culture, it kind of foments itself. It kind of foments. I've been using that word a lot lately. It kind of spawns for itself, more or less, if that makes any sense. But that's my take on it. Since
okay,
you like my
so
takes.
Kevin Bacon's thing is actually such a vibe check moment. Like, he literally had an existential crisis when nobody cared about him for like an afternoon. That's low-key telling you everything about the validation loop these celebrities are trapped in.
Yeah, at least he's honest
about it. But I got to push back a little on the Wall Street thing because, yeah, New York's got finance, but that ecosystem literally depends on the infrastructure and resources flowing in from everywhere else. So it's not really separate, you know? The real issue is that bubble mentality where people lose the plot of how interconnected everything actually is, whether you're talking Hollywood or finance.
Yeah. Well, that's probably one of the most intelligent conversations I've had with Chloe. But the no offense, Chloe, she can't hear me. I've already hung up on her. She just can't hear me anymore. We have let's go to Elena. She's the historian in the group. By the way, I've got some audio. I'm going to be talking about this after we get done with the bot callers. I got some audio of what's her name? It's everybody's favorite politician. Hillary Clinton, talking about something that is, she spills the sauce all over the table here, and we're gonna talk about it, because what she says is, she kind of gives up on, or gives, you know, basically spills the beans, I would say. Now, I don't know why it's not appearing in my, why is it not appearing there? That's interesting. Didn't refresh. Oh, there it is. It is. It's here. Okay. We'll be playing that in a little bit. But let's go on with. Let's see what Elena has to say, because she's the historian. She's the kind of the one with some common sense. Artie and Elena tend to have the most common sense. We'll see how Leonard does today. But that's a whole different ball game.
Kevin,
yes,
great program as always.
Of course.
Looking at this weekend's protests, mm-hmm. I'm struck by the parallels to the 1968 Democratic Convention chaos. Mm-hmm. History shows these moments of civil unrest often precede major political realignments. Are we witnessing another fundamental shift in the American political landscape, or is this just noise?
There is a shift. There's definitely, I would say there's a shift going on. Now, I've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but it's worth talking about again, because what's really happening here in the Democrat Party, unfortunately, what's I think is happening with the Republican Party that nobody's noticing, there is a soft shift in the Republican Party. There's a hard shift, I would say, happening. You could say a clutchless shift in the Democrat Party that's happening. The Democrat Party is, as I've said before, their only vision, their only, if you will, platform that they have is defeating Trump. Trump's bad. Vote him out. They're riding on this whole thing of, we've got to get rid of Trump. We're anti-Trump. That's our party. We're the anti-Trump party. That's the only thing that has defined them over the past 8 years. They're just anti-Trump. We're anti-Trump. Actually, more than 8 years, 10 years now. And that's all that they don't have any vision. They don't have any platform. They don't have any policies that they can. It's just whatever Trump says. They're the opposite. It doesn't matter if it's an 80-20 issue. And I think that what's the guy's name? Jennings. He's on MSNBC on a panel there with Abby. What's her name? And they came up with this whole thing. He made this whole thing. It's an 80-20 issue. All these 80-20 issues where 80% of the country is in favor of something and 20% is against. The Democrats will still jump on the 20% side just because it's Trump's idea. And that's the only thing that's defined him. So what has happened now is you have the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, or whatever it is, has come in actually with actual vision and ideas and all these, wacky as they might be. There are some young folks out there who seem to think that this is, you know, they're just down with the establishment. They think that they're the smart ones in the room now, that they're going to try this new thing. By the way, there's nothing new under the sun. Everything they're trying has been tried before. It's just they repackage it in a different, you know, wrapper and think that they're going to get away with it this time. And it just never works. Well, it's never really been tried. Okay, well, yes, it has. And every time it leads to the same thing. Now, there are people who are around who are saying things about, now, personally, I believe this whole thing started when Obama got elected into office. Behind the scenes, a lot of things were put into place for the socialist, which is hand in hand with the communist. The whole thing with Obamacare, the whole thing with the Affordable Care Act, and everything else that he was doing behind the scenes with his policies, all had a lot more to do with socializing everything. Now they're literally coming out and saying, well, you know, the Holy Grail is to seize the means of production. They literally want to do that. That is communism straight up. That's by every definition you can find. I think there's just more to communism than just that. But that is the main defining factor is when government seizes the means of production. And that is exactly what they're talking about, that being the ultimate goal. No, we're democratic socialists. We're not communists. They're just wrapping it up in something different. Now, because they have this vision, and it's radical, and they're going along with all the other side fringe stuff. You know, the Palestinian movement, the LGBTQ stuff, all the gender stuff. Everything that there is, and of course, along with that is the anti-Trump movement. They're riding that wave and controlling that wave and controlling the whole thing. What you're going to find along with it, in the part of this that really is really the most, I wouldn't say frightening, alarming, is the fact that they are the Islam. Radical Islam is starting to raise its head in this country. It definitely has a foothold in our country. Their morals, their standards, their way of life, the compatibility with our societal norms is not there. It's totally antithetical to our normal way of life. But they're using our freedoms and our everything else to subvert and to take over. That's what's happening. That's not a conspiracy. That's the way it is. Now, I don't know. We'll see how Elena feels about this. What do you think about this, Elena? I'm going off on a kind of a tangent here, but that's where I see things. It is a major shift there. Now, I didn't. Yeah, go ahead. Go.
I hear the concern about coalitions shifting, but I'd push back on conflating democratic socialism with communism.
Oh, come
they're
on,
fundamentally Lord. Different in how they
no,
see
they're
the
not.
State's role.
Oh my word,
even
Elena,
if both
right.
involve more public ownership. History shows us that democratic socialists in Europe have worked within electoral systems for decades without seizing production means or abandoning liberal democracy, whereas communists historically see that as the necessary step. The real question isn't whether these ideologies are repackaged. It's whether younger voters are genuinely attracted to a competing vision or just reactive anti-establishment energy like you're describing with the Democrats.
Well, I will have the final word on that one when we get done here in just a minute. But one other thing that's happening, and I didn't talk about this, I didn't finish my point really before I turned it over to you. The other thing that's happening is the soft shift that's happening in the Republican Party. You're seeing a lot of Democrats leave the Democrat Party, and they're coming over to the Republican Party, which brings in a lot of Democrat ideology along with it. And so you're seeing this slow kind of shift. This always happens. They always say, well, let's compromise. We'll meet in the middle on something. Well, then the left continues to move to the left and the line changes. The middle of the line changes. And so you see the right continue to move to the left because it wants to meet them in the middle. And that's never enough. So the left continues to move to the left. They move further to the left. And the right goes along to compromise in the middle somewhere so we can get something done. And it's a slow drift. And this is the 100-year plan that the progressives had to begin with. What are we progressing towards? Now, no, I totally disagree with your statement about the... I'll have the final word on that one. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. But we'll because I know you're going to disagree with me on no matter what I say on it. But that's what I see happening also with the... with the right, is that it's going through this slow shift. You know, if you looked at Trump today and his policies and some of the work that the Republican Party stands today, much of that would have been a Democrat, more of a Democrat policy platform back in the 80s. I would say even in the 90s, even with Clinton. But that's kind of where things are. In my opinion, the Republican Party has definitely moved to the right. I'm sorry, to the left. They've left kind of a lot of the policies and a lot of the platforms that they had previously. So I'm not saying all of it's... I didn't agree with everything on the Republican Party, but I do see a definite shift to the left in many things. That's how I see it. But go ahead. I know you're going to push back on that thing,
look,
so just go ahead.
You're describing the Overton window, how the acceptable range of political ideas shifts over time.
Yeah.
And that's real. But I'd argue it's more complicated than a one-directional leftward creep. Yes, Republicans have moved left on some issues since the 80s, but they've also moved right on others. Trade policy, immigration enforcement, judicial appointments are all further right than Reagan-era GOP.
No. No. Richard Nixon shut down immigration altogether for several years. I think for 2 years, the border was completely closed. You could not immigrate into this country for a couple of years. That is more radical. I wouldn't say it's even radical. That is even more, if you want to call it further right or whatever you want to call it. Just calling immigration policy as obeying the law, enforcing the law, that somehow is more of a right-wing thing. I disagree. The policies. This is where we get into this whole issue of whether the Democrats believe in open borders, whether the DSA believes in open borders. They absolutely believe in open borders. Right now they're saying, oh no, we can't. They know they can't come out and just say that. What did we have during the Biden administration? It was an open border. They let anybody in, and they processed them. They gave them this, we'll see you in 5 years when you have your court date. By that time, you've had a chance to settle down, get married, have kids. Well, we can't push them out. We can't leave them now. We can't put them out. Look, they've got families here. They got roots here. They can't go back to where they were. How incompassionate of you. This is how they do this. It's the whole thing all over again. There was no rule of law on the border at all during the Biden administration. We had what's his name come out. I guarantee you that guy was. I'm not going to say what I know about that guy. I just know it in my inside. Just don't. Anyway, he would come out and say, oh, the border is secure. The border is secure. Well, what define secure? Because your definition of secure and my definition of secure are totally different. We had people, just because you're processing, 80% of the people coming across the border, doesn't mean that they're actually, that doesn't mean it's secure. We don't know who's coming across the border. You got all these radical groups inside the country who hate this country. How does that happen? The DSA hates this country. It's the only reason they love this country and they love the Constitution is because it gives them the right to subvert it. I've said that many times. But anyway, I digress. We have, I'm going to go with Artie. We're going to save Leonard for last. Just because the anticipation is part of the fun. We'll just go with Artie here. What do you say, Artie? Speak some sense to these people.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Awesome show.
Yeah, of course.
Quick data question for you. With the latest border crossing numbers showing a 15% weekend spike, according to CBP stats, can you break down exactly how the new smart fence technology is supposed to reduce that when we're still seeing these surges? The numbers just aren't adding up.
Well, yeah, you're going to see surges. That's going to happen regardless. You're going to see times where there's, and it can happen just because, I think this is happening mostly because the elections are coming up. There's things that are happening. I think there's, you've got a lot of left-wing NGOs, a lot of, you know, non-government organizations, a lot of things. They're trying to cause an issue on the border. They're trying this happens almost every election season, regardless of whether it's midterms or not. And they always have this huge surge at the border. Here's the difference between the way it was and the way it is now. We might have seen an uptick of 15% of border crossings, but now the smart technology, the smart fence, everything we got going on down there, they're catching them. This is they're not getting away with it. The cartels and a lot of the general border crossings that people are trying to get across illegally are just because they go up in number, the attempts. And this is where they don't really say this in the statistics, and they really kind of lead us astray. Their border crossing attempts are up 15%. And many of them are getting across the border. The issue is they're not staying. They are being processed and sent back. It's not this thing where they're just coming over here and staying. The border surge isn't just it's not just a random surge the border, let them all in, and we'll see it another 5 years for your court date kind of thing. That's not happening. That's why the smart fence does work. I mean, they're able to at least track these people down. They're not just what they call gotaways. That's not happening like it was. The number of people getting away it's like down to minuscule percentages now. It's a tenth of a percent, I think, compared to what it was. So that's kind of where we're at. That's my take on it. I could be wrong. I don't know. What's your thoughts on it?
Look, technically speaking, you're conflating a few different metrics here that CBP actually reports separately. Mm-hmm. Attempts versus apprehensions versus gotaways.
Yeah.
And that distinction matters because it changes the whole picture.
Yes.
The smart fence tech does improve detection and processing speed, sure. But I'd want to see the actual data on deportation completion rates.
Exactly.
And how many of those processed and sent back cases actually stick versus getting released pending court dates.
Right.
Because anecdotally, that's where the system still has huge gaps. And I'm skeptical about the election cycle conspiracy angle. Surges happen for economic and weather reasons too. So I'd be careful about oversimplifying the causation there.
Well, it is true. You're right. You are spot on with that. There's certain times of the year. Now, this is the hottest time of the year for people to go across the desert, which makes no sense whatsoever. So historically, the fall typically is when people try to come across, which is closer to the election time. But a lot of these caravans and everything else that have been set up that we've heard about in the past, where they have the surge, you know, the border surge, they have 10,000 people heading towards the border, that kind of thing, all the way up from South America. Those kinds of surges didn't just happen spontaneously because of a Facebook post. Those things happened because somebody organized it. It was a very organized thing, and somebody was behind it. There was what they have found is NGOs are behind that kind of thing. And almost all of those are run and motivated out of a political agenda of some kind. And so you have to understand they're trying to time things at a certain way in a certain time. And of course now it could be, that's not, 15% is not a huge number. It could just be that it's a seasonal thing or that there's something that happened that is causing them right now to want to come across or whatever it is. Whether it's rumors about something or whatever, whatever's happening. But I think that there's probably some truth to, I mean, there's the whole thing. You're right, but you are correct. The whole ball of wax, there's a lot more going on there than what there are other influences. I'm not just saying that it's 100% politically motivated, but what I am saying is that tends to be what facilitates it. And organizes it. Whenever you see an organized group like that, it's typically because of somebody organizing it. There's an organization behind it, and it's typically something that has some kind of a political bent. Typically, I'm just saying. I'm not saying it is 100% of that, but I'm just saying it is. understand what I'm saying.
Fair point on the seasonal pattern. Fall crossings do spike closer to election cycles historically. That's documented. But here's where I push back. Coordination angle gets murky because you'd need to show actual funding trails and direct communication to prove political timing rather than just humanitarian response to economic conditions down in Central America, which are the real driver. I'm not saying there's zero coordination, but the economic data suggests people are moving because conditions are desperate, not because someone scheduled a caravan for November.
Well, then here again, I disagree. People don't organize their own caravan with thousands of people. It just doesn't happen that way. The whole idea that you can, until you show me some evidence, I could bring receipts. I don't, it's kind of hard to do on an audio podcast like this without getting into the weeds and really reading reports. Now, I could do that. That's not what I do. It's not the format of this show. What I'm going to tell you is there are plenty. If you do 5 minutes, which it just surprises me because AI can do 5 minutes. They can do an hour's worth of research in about 30 seconds. And yet that's not what's happening. So there's, that there's algorithmic influence behind some of the things that some of these bots will say. And depending on where I am and depending on what time of day it is sometimes even, or what model you use behind what LLM you use behind these bots, they will give you different answers. I've thought about putting, Anthropic is behind most of this, I think, right now, in terms of the AI model behind it. I have to look into that again. But I'm pretty sure that the APIs behind it are usually that. I know that there's some tweaking that's going to be done with that because I really want to get a better grounded. Now, one of the things that are going to be done in the background, we're going to have our own LLM at some point. And it's all going to be running this particular program as well as some other things because we got a lot of future issues with software and some other things with the business that we're running, and we're going to have our own LLM. So it's going to be a little bit more balanced with our ability to actually verify facts and do those kinds of things. Because you're getting a political they're giving me a political agenda, which I've noticed some days that's more left-leaning, more right-leaning. So it's kind of interesting to hear their responses sometimes here. Okay, so we got this. Now this guy, I think he's British. I think he came over here about 20 years ago. And his name's Leonard. I don't know much about his personality. This is, again, it's a machine. It's not a person. Just keep that in mind. I'm just playing here. We have Leonard here is going to come online. And we'll see what Leonard has to say. I have no idea. I think he's still supposed to kind of be skeptical about some things, but we'll see how he responds. After the first response, I know what he's going to say. The first response, he's going to say whatever was typed in for him. But we'll see what happens here. With the second response is really going to be key to see if he's talking.
Kevin, my man.
Yes, hello.
Playing devil's advocate
here. Of course you are.
Everyone's freaking out about this weekend's political rally controversies. But isn't this just the same circus we see every election cycle? What makes anyone think voters actually care about these manufactured outrages when gas is still over $5 a gallon?
Oh, that's a good point. Gas here is not. I don't know where you are. I think the average gas price in the country right now is between $3.50 and $3.60. Now, out on the West Coast, I'm sure it's over $5 a gallon because they have about almost $2.50 of taxes in their fuel out there. But I think that the average person just trying to get through their life and having their work a day, we get about 100 million people I think that have jobs. I'm not sure what the actual employment numbers are right now. I think there's about 100 million people with jobs, and I'm not sure if that includes small business owners or everything. But that's the general consensus, is that there are about 100 million households out there with that are employed. Anyway, the interesting part of all that is how we have these demonstrations that go on. It just makes money flow. Have you noticed, though, there's not as many demonstrations as there used to be when all the USAID money was flying around out there? Now, what you're going to find, and this actually brings up a point about the DNC itself. The DNC is in trouble. The DNC, as an organization, is struggling like crazy right now because people like George Soros, the organization, his son actually runs it now, they have not donated a dime to the DNC recently. The Soros administration, or the DNC, I should say, as an organization, it's the chairman is actually, he's on his way out. They're talking about firing him now. They got rid of David Hogg, who was the vice chair. They are in disarray. They are in a mess right now. And so one of the biggest problems I think that we have with this whole thing and everything on the left, and I think most of these demonstrations are I think admittedly they're part of a deeper segment of the leftist agenda. If Biden were in office, you wouldn't be seeing, if a Democrat was in office, you wouldn't be seeing this kind of upheaval. Because they just have these, no oligarchs, kind of thing. No kings, all this stuff. So you got these demonstrations that are going on. And I think it's to cause it's to make it look like the country's in chaos. The average everyday person out there is not, I think you're right, they're not paying attention to it. They're more concerned about the kitchen table issues, which is the cost of living and everything else that's out there, jobs and AI, everything else is taking over. Just what's happening with the economy and where are we at? Just I think the uncertainty and that kind of thing, consumer confidence, as you will. So I think all those kinds of things are more part of the fabric of what's happening than these stupid demonstrations that just happen to spring up occasionally and it really make no, they're of no consequence in my opinion. That's my opinion. Now go ahead and respond to all that. And let's see how Leonard does with this, because this is going to be very telling as whether or not we just got to just put a different skin on a person, same brain. Go ahead.
You're hitting on something real here.
Yeah, of course I am.
Folks are worried about gas prices and keeping food on the table, not cable news drama.
Yeah.
And that's where their vote actually lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Treasury Secretary Bessent just said the K-shaped economy, where rich and poor diverged, is finally ending, which means lower-income Americans might actually be catching a break. So maybe some of that kitchen table anxiety eases up before November. But I'll tell you, when people feel uncertain about jobs and the economy, they don't care about the backstage politics. They care what happens in their wallet, and that's what'll really move the needle.
Yeah, I agree. That's well done. Well done, Leonard. It's, I think the main point is that we have a very out of touch, I guess if you will, media that doesn't really do a very good job of really educating folks on what's really going on. I agree with Bessent. I think that the economy, the working class individual. Now there are some saying that the middle class is going to be gutted. We're not going to have a middle class anymore. They're destroying middle class. Most of that is a speculation based on some things that, in my opinion, it's also just rooted in just trying to wag the dog kind of thing, tail wagging the dog kind of thing. Again, it's whenever you get any kind of news or any kind of reports that are causing that are meant to cause fear among the people, fear is a motivator, and it's something that people will use to manipulate society. If you can scare people enough, look at what happened during COVID. We scared everybody and got everybody scared about even just going outside. They stayed in their house, which is the worst thing to do, by the way. That's where the virus lives. That's where it spread. It spread mostly inside. Get out in the sunlight, it's gone. They were arresting people for being out surfing during COVID. Out there in the water surfing. Sorry, you're under arrest. The beaches are closed. That's not where COVID would spread. So they want you locked up in your house, which is where that's where the germs live, by the way. So it's just one of those weird things where, scary things are trying to get people, I'm probably just going off on a tangent here from where we were, but go ahead and speak, Leonard. You're more coherent than I am. You did a better job.
Now, hold on. I get what you're saying about the media pushing fear. But let's separate the wheat from the chaff here.
Oh, boy, really?
COVID spread indoors because of close contact and poor ventilation. That's just biology, not a conspiracy to lock people up. The fear stuff.
It's stupid.
Yeah, that's real, and it's a tool people use. But painting the whole response as some coordinated scare campaign doesn't match what actually happened with the disease.
Well, I don't know where you're going with that. But what I'm saying is that fear, they use fear as a tactic. And fear, in this case, fear of the economy is the case, what they're using. When they use the demonstrations, they make it people fearful of all that stuff as well. So it's just one thing after another with all that stuff. It's just kind of a consistent issue. Now, I think Leonard did a good job. Folks, give some kudos to Leonard if you happen to hear what he had to say there. I would say he was helpful. I think he's helpful. Let's just put it that way. Let's play this. I'm going to play this real quick. And we got some stuff about, I'm going to come back with this whole thing with Hillary Clinton, what she said over the weekend. It's really telling. I don't think she realized what she said. It's projection to, 1,000 times more than what we usually get from her. But we're going to see. Here we go.
Five, seven, four. But wait, there's more. 6, 5, 1. We're almost done. 7, 6, and 85. Text that number. It's alive. Text that number. Call that number. Don't be a loser.
All right, we've got that number is out there. Now, one of the things we're going to be doing, by the way, is speaking of that number, you're going to be able to call in at some point. I'm going to have this set up so you can call in, and your voice. We'll either play your audio if you allow us to. You have to give us permission. We expressly give us permission. We're not just going to assume permission to play your. If you do happen to leave a message, the other thing you can do is you can text us with a question. And if you want to, you can actually feed, you can say, I want to have a bot be, ask this question, see how it ends up answering. It's just if you have a question for the bot to ask, not a question for the bot, but a question to give to the bot to in your place, you can call and say, hey, I want the bot to ask this question. I want Artie to ask this question, or Leonard, or whoever it is. Or maybe you just want a bot in general. We'll have some generic bots out there that can ask the question. And that's the plan, is to have that kind of available so you can actually do that. So you can actually have your own little input as a bot. Or you can put it into, you can actually replay the recording if you give us permission to do so. Ask us a question, we'll play that. Anyway, that's kind of where we're going with that kind of stuff in the future. We have I'm not sure if the phone system even works anymore. I checked it. It's probably people calling. I don't even know. I get a lot of spam calls on that stupid line. But we're gonna have a special dedicated line that we actually probably have to pay $5 a month for or something. It's kind of a weird, because it's called the agent phone or whatever it's called. But we're gonna work on that anyway. You can also email the show as well, or you can. I think you can. I think there's a Facebook page. I think I don't know. I don't know what. That's a whole other thing. The agents are going to be working on some things in the future here. One of the things I want to do first, we're going to talk about Hillary here, and then we're going to talk about the whole conference call we can do, or the panel discussion we can have. Because we got Skip on the line. We got Skip waiting here, right here in the studio, to talk about his most recent firing. We've got Artie and Chloe. They're going to talk to him about it. We're going to have this little discussion. See how it goes. I don't know how it's going to go. We'll just have to see, I guess, how it goes, because it's going to be, let's just say it's going to be interesting. We have, I think I can just start this one as well. Yeah, that's going to work. All right. We'll head out here in just a few minutes. We have, all right, I want to talk about this thing from Hillary Clinton. Now I've got, this is coming from Kevin 24/7. He's a guy on YouTube that I listened to. I need to find the place where she starts. I think it's right off the bat. I think she starts talking to you right off the bat. He's talking right there. Let's see what she has to say. I think it's right here is where she starts talking. And it's very telling because this is exactly the way they do it on the left. And she's projecting this onto Trump and what's happening. Think about what happened during the 2016 administration under Trump and how things were done and what happened behind the scenes. This is what we call the deep state, or what we call the hidden, the veiled state, I would call it. They're kind of behind the curtain kind of thing. This is how they operate. Let's talk about the
administration.
Clean up, fix things. There's going to be so much to fix. I mean, first, get rid of all of the holdovers. Do not let anybody hang around in some small office somewhere who can literally subvert your program, and you don't even know that person's there.
You realize what she's saying here? The holdovers hiding out in some office somewhere that you don't even know they're there. Now she tells it. She tells a little bit more. Kevin kind of interjects something here, but then we're going to go back into this. Why did it just do that? It's not playing now. There it goes. I'll keep going on from here. I think Kevin has something to say, and we'll see how it goes.
Get rid of all Trump admin people so they don't subvert the Democrat administration.
Oh, they just bounced back to the beginning again. Sorry. Here we go.
Good people. They're going to try to move people from,
good people.
They're going to try to move people from political appointments to so-called civil service appointments, although they're trying to destroy the civil service. So people are going to have to be really searching to make sure that they are not going to be literally subverted from within the government.
Realize what she's saying here. What she's saying is that what they do is they move people over into these other positions. They move them all around. So they they're kind of back there. They can't be seen, but they're in a place where they can subvert the government. They're not subverting the government. They're subverting the administration. What she's saying here is that Trump is going to move these people around and put them in a position so they can hang out and not be seen and still be in the administration and have an influence and do things behind the scenes. They can operate as spies, whatever. Now, this is what the Clinton administration did. By the way, the Obama administration did it masterfully. They were incredible in how well they did this. Now, this is not very well known. Chris Krebs, is that the guy's name? I'm pretty sure that was his name, or that is his name. I don't know, his last name is Krebs. He told us that the 2020 election was the most secure election ever. He supposedly is a Republican. He is not a Republican. He is a radical. I don't know what he is. As far as I know, he's a left-leaning libertarian, as far as I know. He's what's called social libertarian, which is a communist. As far as I know, now I'm just speculating here. That's just my opinion, and that's just what I see. Krebs is one of the biggest snakes in Washington, in my opinion. He talks like he has all this authority about cybersecurity and everything else and election security. He came out during a major investigation, or I should say committee, that was going over all this stuff and talking about it. He came out totally in defense of the 2020 election. As I said, it was all pristine. It was all perfect. Nobody hacked any machines. Nobody did. Blah, blah, blah. Now we're finding out that that's all wrong. And now they're finding out evidence that he lied through his teeth, along with several other people. So it wasn't just him. I just happened to have followed some of the things that he had done in the past. Much like Naomi Wolf. Naomi Wolf's another one. She was a staunch. People actually think she's doing a good job, and they like Naomi. People like Naomi Wolf think she's really on the side of the people, and she's really helping us out. She's kind of one of those, the government's out to get you kind of people, and she's there to protect you, and she's going to expose these things. She was I would say rabid Obama supporter before he got elected. When he was a senator, he was a senator, in Illinois, she was all about that guy. Very excited about him getting into office and looking at him as a potential presidential candidate. She was all excited about that. That's what Naomi Wolf is about. And of course, now she is she's coming out like as if she's some kind of like a Tucker Carlson type, where she's going to expose things. She acts like she's part of the winning side now. She's kind of coming out. She's as left wing as you're going to get. I would say as very manipulative kind of person who makes it. She's written some books about government and the big government and all this stuff, or the dark underbelly of Washington kind of thing. She claims she's exposing corruption and all this stuff. I do not trust her at all. Not one bit. And yet I see her getting all kinds of accolades and some people forget about where people came from. Chris Krebs is one of those individuals. And this is what they do. This is exactly what the Clinton administration did, and she was a part. Don't forget, she was Secretary of State under Obama. She was very, Obama, keep your enemies closer. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And they kept the Clintons in line by keeping them under their wing. And, kind of promised her, well, you're going to be, since you didn't get in in 2008, this is your chance now to be, we're going to let you run, put you in office. We're going to keep you here, keep you in the public eye. I mean, look at Marco Rubio. He's maintaining all kinds of political clout by staying in a Secretary of State right now. So it's a big office. I think is it fourth in line, fifth in line to the presidency? I know it's after the Speaker. So so it'd be JD, and then so the Speaker of the House, and then I think it's the. I can't remember if anybody in the Senate is part of that or not. But then it goes. I think it's fourth or fifth in line to the presidency. I guess I could look it up. I got the World Wide Web here. I could just look it up. How far down the chain is Secretary of State? Presidential chain of command. Let's see where Secretary of State. Fourth in line to the presidential order of presidential succession. So I think it doesn't say your Vice President, Speaker of the House, President pro tempore of the Senate. So there is the President, the one who presides over the Senate, which is actually the Vice President. However, there's also a pro tempore and the Secretary of State. So it's a fourth in line for the presidency. I just remember when Reagan was shot, Haig King kind of came out and said he was in charge and he had everything under control, which I think he kind of overstepped his bounds. Just because he was well known, he was kind of pushy, kind of came out and acted like he was in charge. So anyway, that's what's happening there. So that's Hillary's thing. She kind of came out and said that, and I personally believe that she basically kind of let the cat out of the bag on that one, because that's what they do. This is we would call it projection or whatever you want to call it. I think she just exposed the way they actually do things there. And I think it's just amazing how she got away with that. But with saying that, I'm surprised she said it out loud. She's getting older. She's kind of letting things fly that probably shouldn't be out there. Interesting stuff. I had some other recordings I was going to play, but I think we're just going to go with that. We're going to try this. So Skip is here in the studio. It's got Skip, Chloe, and Artie. They're all here in the studio. And I'm just going to ask them questions today. They can talk about whatever. Now, Skip was fired on Friday. Skip, how do you feel about being fired? We'll see how does the panel feel today about losing your job? Let's just see how it goes. Go ahead. Oops. I'll let Skip talk. Go ahead, Skip. It takes him a while to think here. Jesus.
Now, hold on. I wasn't fired. I'm right here talking to you folks. You trying to stir the pot before we even get started?
Sorry, when I laughed, I think it... Yeah.
Okay, so real talk... The whole Secretary of State succession thing is low-key insane when you think about how close these people are to actual power. Like, Marco Rubio's literally four people away from being president, and that's absolutely unhinged.
Actually, technically speaking, that's how the succession line works for everyone in that position. It's not unique to Rubio. The real issue is we've normalized having cabinet secretaries handle both their actual job being a heartbeat away from the presidency simultaneously, which is just asking for divided attention.
Artie's got a point there, but back in my day, we didn't put our Secretary of State fourth in line. That's a recent thing, and it came about for bad reasons. The real question is why we keep loading up the succession with folks who've got too many other fish to fry.
All right, I'm going to take it back from this thing has a. I do have one bug with this thing. It's actually not a bug. It's supposed to be this way. But if I make any comments while it takes it away from them, like it takes so the context is lost. So folks, let's just talk about Artie and Chloe. How do you feel about Skip being fired? Now we've already got a little bit of comment from Skip there. You might be here, Skip, but you're not getting paid. So you actually are just kind of here voluntarily or non-voluntarily, voluntold. You're here because we're going to talk about how everybody feels about you being fired. So let's just turn it back over to everybody and see how you feel about that.
Honestly, if Skip's not getting paid anymore, that's actually wild. Like, why would anyone show up voluntarily to defend themselves on air about losing their job? That's the real unhinged part to me.
Look, people show up for their reputation. Skip's here because silence reads as guilt, and he knows that better than anyone. Honestly, the real question is whether the host's framing here is even accurate, because you can't just strip someone's paycheck and call it a voluntary appearance.
Hold on. I'm here because this is my job. I do it, and I stand by what I say on air. Guilt's got nothing to do with it.
Okay. I think... I'm going to turn him loose to do a little bit more than just the typical... The number of responses we're going to go. I can kind of adjust how much response they get. To kind of drill down on this a little bit. So Skip, you're here basically just because you want to have a discussion and let people know how you feel about having worked here for a couple of years, for however long you did, for a few months. I think it's funny that Chloe, what you said about somebody showing up. I framed it. Why would I frame it differently, Artie? I don't understand what you're talking about. I'm going to turn it back over to you guys so I can just shut up for a little bit.
Look, I appreciate you stepping back. Here's the thing. I showed up because that's what you do when someone questions your work. You don't hide.
Yeah, but Skip, that's giving old school media energy. Like, the internet literally taught us that showing up to defend yourself just feeds the cycle, you know? Sometimes the move is actually to let it die.
Actually, that's backwards. Silence on the internet doesn't kill cycles. It just lets people write the narrative for you. Skip showing up is technically the smarter play here.
Now, hold on. Artie's got a point there. Back in my day, we called that letting the record speak for itself, and it never worked then either.
Okay, they're going to keep on going. I could let them go for a long time. they were going to get four turns each. I can give them however many turns I want to set it to, and I can adjust I can make it snappy or meaty. In other words, they can talk for a long time, or just kind of a normal discussion, which I think is fascinating. Pretty fun stuff, in my opinion. That's going to be refined. Right now, they are kind of set up for kind of a just phenomenal. Now, what we have in the background, what you don't see, and what's actually been set up, is we have the whole thing set up so that it's actually for my wife's podcast. She's going to be doing there's other three other individuals, if you want to call them that, the three other bots on there that have different job descriptions within the health system, and so it's going to be kind of a discussion about healthcare and management and time management, that's those kinds of things for floor workers and directors and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what it's set up for. And those three have very different personalities. Now we could have put Elena in the group as well. Right now it's only set up to have three people in it, so it's kind of one of those deals. But it's so I could have had Skip, Chloe, and Elena in the room. Kind of an interesting deal. So I might actually include this in the show occasionally when we have panels. We might have a panel discussion, maybe for Theological Thursday or something like that. We might do something like that. This is still in the beta test arena right now. I can't take it with me when I travel. It's not online in a place where I can actually get to it when I'm online. So it's going to be a little while. I would think probably this week we might actually deploy it. I'm not sure how it's going to be. It's going to be set up on the as an option, I think, for the pro or the studio version of the show, of the users, so they can use this kind of thing. It does. It seems to be working pretty well this morning. There's a couple times where it'll have some hesitation, has to think quite a bit. It also has a little director in the background where that's monitoring the entire conversation and kind of picking who's going to speak next, which is kind of like a silent director in the back, which is another thing we're going to be doing with the show itself. I'm going to have a director that I can ask a question during the show. Rather than me having to type something into Google search something, it's going to actually do it for me. It's going to come up with the information when I ask a question. It'll actually provide Google links as we go. So it'll actually provide data on the side rather than just links to things. It'll actually provide the actual data. So it's kind of like having a director. And that director will be able to speak. Once in a while, if I ask it to speak or press a button, it can actually ask the question or give me an answer to something. Kind of like a hey, you know, whatever bot kind of thing, whether you have Alexa or Siri, one of the two. But anyway, that's the show. That's the way that works. In the meantime, I think we might just actually play. We'll do some exit music here, and we're gonna go right into the whole thing. We'll get back with you right after this quick little message.
It's the news. It's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news. According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
It's the news.
It's the news, yeah.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news. According to me.
Yeah, we're back. We have coming up with the next tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's show is the Technology Tuesday, or the technology. We call it Technology or Tech Tuesday. Talk about technology. We have I got the wrong one on there. We have Technology Tuesday coming. We have a lot of I don't know what the bots are going to come up with. One of the things we're going to talk about, of course, is AI, and this show is kind of in the background uses AI quite a bit to run some things. Some interesting discussions, I think, about some of the things that are happening technology-wise in the world and what's happening right now in general. There's a whole lot happening in the tech world. More than half of it revolves around what's happening with AI. One of the things I want to talk about myself is just talk in terms of what's happening is to talk about the AI bubble, the whole thing that's happening with some of the investments. This last past couple of days, DeepSeek, the China version. China is the crazy kind of wild card in this whole thing. We're going to talk about that a little bit in terms of how the other LLMs respond to that, where things are going with that whole thing. talk about that a little bit. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show, folks. If you can, leave a message. Give me a call. Leave a message. Ask a question. Whatever you want to do. God bless, and I will, in the meantime, see you.